1 o'clock. The latest BBC News from Katrina Young.
Russia has expressed serious concern about reports of violence in the Syrian city of Hama, where scores of civilians were said to have been killed yesterday in attacks by security forces. The Russian Foreign Ministry said the use of force against civilians was unacceptable and must cease. France has said that it's helping to prepare new European Union sanctions targeting President Assad. But there are reports this morning that tanks have shelled parts of Hama, resulting in 4 deaths. A 27-year-old nurse has appeared in court in relation to the deaths of a number of patients at Stepping Hill Hospital in Stockport. Rebecca Layton appeared via video link to confirm her name. Lawyers told the court of the complexity of the police investigation, including the toxicology and pathology tests, which have still to be carried out. A provisional trial date was set for February the 28th. The banking group HSBC has reported half-year profits of £7 billion, up 3% on last year. But the figures came alongside an announcement that the bank will cut up to 30,000 jobs, around 10% of its workforce. The reductions will come primarily from the closure of retail businesses in Russia and Poland, the sale of 3 insurance businesses, and the closure of some branches in the US. No new job losses announced today will come in the UK. The bodies of 25 African men have been found in the hold of a boat which arrived at the small Italian island of Lampedusa after crossing from Libya. The 50-foot craft was carrying 296 people, including women and children. It's not clear what caused the deaths, but it suggested that the men might have been asphyxiated in the boat's engine room. Republican and Democrat leaders have reached agreement on a deal to allow America's debt ceiling to be raised, so avoiding the country defaulting on its financial obligations. President Obama has urged politicians to support the agreement when it's discussed in Congress later today. And the weather forecast, it'll be warm and sunny in most areas, but with a risk of showers spreading to the north and west of England later. And that's the BBC News and Weather. Now on Radio 3, it's time for Prom's Chamber Music, live from the Cadogan Hall in London. It's presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall for the third of this year's Prom's Chamber Music recitals. And today we must transport ourselves from the fringes of present-day Chelsea to the heart of Baroque France, as Christophe Rousset leads his ensemble Les Talents Lyriques in a programme of music by Couperin, F., Lully, Rameau and Monteclair. Quintessential French names, all of them. But there's more than a hint of Italian influence in the music we're going to hear. The marriage of these two great national styles was called the Réunion... I'm so sorry, I will say that in proper French. Réunion des goûts, the union of tastes. Les Talents Lyriques begin in the year 1726, when François Couperin published Les Nations. 4 large concerts, composed each of a large trio sonata in the Italian style, introducing a French suite. Couperin was charmed by the sonatas of Signor Corelli, whose works I shall love as long as I live. But he also claimed to understand the keen appetite of the French for things new and foreign in all fields. So when he assembled Les Nations, he Frenchified the trio sonatas as sonades and added, I complimented them with large suites for which the sonade merely serve as preludes. Couperin was called a dedicated servant of Italy by one of his contemporaries, and now we have the chance to appreciate his juxtaposition of French and Italian style as we welcome harpsichordist Christophe Rousset to direct Les Talents Lyriques in the last of the 4 large concerts that make up Les Nations, La Piémontoise.
Thank you.
La Piémontoise, the fourth and last of François Couperin's grand set of sonades et suites, which he called Les Nations. It was played by the ensemble Les Talents Lyriques, directed from the harpsichord by Christophe Rousset. Who's staying on stage? Joining me, I have a microphone in my hand, to talk now. Now, I was trying, when not being ravished by the music, to think of identifying characteristics that I could say, oh, that's Italian, that's French. And the only one I've really come up with in your presence is that last movement, only the French could make a gigue as delicate and sexy as that. The Italians would have made it a much more outgoing sort of thing.
Because it has been played by French people.
Do you know, I never thought of that. Christophe, tell me about the reuniting of the tastes of French and Italian. How important is it that we as listeners can identify it, or does it really not matter?
It doesn't matter, really. I think that program is really a proof that French people were trying desperately to sound Italian, despite they never succeeded, really, as you heard with Couperin. But Couperin was actually trying to imitate Corelli as much as he could, but could never really forget about his nation and French style and the delicatesse you hear in that music.
For an audience hearing Couperin and his friends play it, was that one of the delicious ancillary pleasures, spotting les goûts réunis?
Yeah, the idea was actually to unify to make peace between Corelli and Lully, and we have a fantastic piece written by Couperin himself, L'Apothéose de Lully, where both composers are actually meeting and trying to make a peace, a treatise. Yes, the idea is actually to just unify and just have music and not French or Italian music. That was the idea in the 18th century. And I think somebody like Rameau really is the one who really unified both styles, and perhaps Mondonville after him even more.
Well, we're going to hear some Rameau later, but now we come on to Monsieur, or is it Signor, Lully, who was from Florence, and he came to Paris and he wrote a ballet called Les Amours Déguisées,
yeah,
and included in it a wonderful scena in Italian, A Rinaldo. Uh-huh. Now, how does that fit together?
Lully came to Paris, he was 17, so he hardly sounds like an Italian, really, and his music is the model for French opera. And he was asked by Louis XIV to be the one who would create French opera. So he has really created a style, especially for the king. And here, this is the premises of what he will do a little later in opera. But it's already, ballet at that time is already a kind of an opera with a lot of dance and divertissement. That's it.
Thank you very much, Christophe. In a moment, soprano Eugénie Varnier will join Les Talents Lyriques to sing an impassioned scena by Lully. He may have left his native Italy when he was only 17, but he stayed very much in touch with the histrionic talents of Italian singers. Now, while the instrumentalists check their tunings, here's a taste of the intense emotions of the piece we'll hear in a minute. The Saracen sorceress Armida bewails her abandonment by the crusading warrior Rinaldo. So neither my grief nor my tears can halt your steps. The ardent fire that burned in you gives way to cruelty. You witless hulks who let him go, get out of my sight. To sing Lully's monologue, Ah, Rinaldo, e dove sei, we welcome Eugénie Varnier.
Thank you.
Eugénie Varmier, the embodiment of righteous indignation and misery, as Armida deplores the disappearance of Rinaldo in that monologue by Jean-Baptiste Lully, written in 1664. Next, Christophe Rousset and Les Talents Lyriques move to the year 1741 and instrumental music by Jean-Philippe Rameau. His pièces de clavecin en concert are best described, perhaps, as accompanied keyboard music, in which the harpsichord part is backed up by violin or flute and bass viol or second violin. We're going to hear the first of them, which has three movements, all with evocative titles. La Kulikam, a corruption of Kublai Khan, the Persian warrior king, and two movements named after French villages, La Livrée and Le Vésiné, which in Rameau's day was a country retreat for Parisians. It's now a suburb. Well, in Rameau's day, the area around Cadogan Hall was probably all trees. Now Les Talents Lyriques transport us back with the first of his pièces de clavecin en concert.
Thank you.
les talents lyriques playing the first of Rameau's pièces de clavecin en concert. And to end today's concert here at Cadogan Hall, the players are joined once again by soprano Eugénie Varnier for a performance of another dramatic scena, the cantata Morte di Lucrezia, written in 1728 by Michel Pignolet de Monteclair. The solo cantata began life in Italy, and the first French ones were published at the beginning of the 18th century. Monteclair published 24 of them, and in the one we're going to hear now, he pays tribute to the cantata's Italian origins by setting the tragic tale of Tarquinius's rape of Lucretia and her subsequent suicide. Handel had made a cantata of the story when he was in Rome in 1708, and it's tempting to speculate as to whether Monteclair knew of that heartbreaking work. But unlike Handel, who ends with Lucrezia calling as she dies on the gods of hell to wreak eternal vengeance, Monteclair's Lucrezia acknowledges the inevitability of her disgrace and calls for help from the Elysian fields. And the cantata's last words celebrate her nobility. She triumphed even as she died. Eugénie Varnier and Les Talents Lyriques perform Monteclair's cantata Morte di Lucrezia. And thus Lucretia died, showing to the Tyburn new paths of glory. Eugénie Varnier was the soloist in Monteclair's cantata Morte di Lucrezia with Les Talents Lyriques, whose players are violinists Virginie Descharmes and Yukiko Ike, with viola da gamba player Isabelle Saint-Yves, and flautists Jocelyn Daubinier and Stéphanie Trofaes. The concert was directed from the harpsichord by Christophe Rousset. It's going to be repeated next Saturday afternoon at 2, and you can also enjoy it again for 7 days via the Radio 3 website. Tonight at 7:30 at the Royal Albert Hall, Beethoven, Saint-Saëns and Liszt. I'm back next Monday at 1 p.m. with mesmerising pianist Katia Buniatishvili. But for now, it's good afternoon from me, Catherine Bott, as I hand you over to Broadcasting House.
Well, thanks to Catherine Bott and the players at Cadogan Hall there. This is BBC Radio 3. It's now 7 minutes past two, and another chance to hear last Friday night's BBC Prom. It's presented by Petroc Trelawney.
Welcome back to the Proms. It's about this time each year that I suddenly begin to appreciate the vitality and versatility of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. They appear considerably more often each season than any other orchestra, 12 times this year, but it's the variety that they offer that really impresses. A stunning Verdi Requiem, Janáček's Glagolitic Mass on the first night, less than a week later, Smetana's Ma Vlast. Well, tonight, a different sort of programme altogether. Six 20th century European works, a concert that places Arthur Honegger alongside Frank Bridge, features Berg setting Baudelaire in praise of wine, and presents portraits of Winter and the Sea, works by Niccolo Castiglione and Debussy. Well, the programme's been devised by conductor and composer Oliver Nussen, the BBC Symphony Orchestra's artist in association, and he starts with two works by the Swiss composer Arthur Honegger, Pastorale d'Été in just under 10 minutes' time, and first of all, Pacific 231. Now, as someone who appreciates the speed and the comfort of Britain's railways, I'm always delighted to hear this piece. I have to say, I don't stand on windy platforms collecting train data, but I suspect that Honegger was a bit of a train spotter. There's a terrific picture in the Proms programme tonight of him in mechanics overalls admiring a French Pacific class locomotive. You can see it yourself via bbc.co.uk/proms. Pacific class locos were known, thanks to the layout of their wheels, as 462s. At least that's how they were known in this country and in the Commonwealth. In France, they called them 231s, and the power, weight, strength and speed of the great steam machine inspired the work that we're about to hear. I didn't want to imitate the sound of the locomotive, said Honegger, but to convey in musical form a visual impression. The quiet turning over of the machine at rest, the sense of exertion as it starts up, the increase in speed, and then finally the emotion, the sense of passion inspired by a 300-ton train racing through the night. And here's Stephen Bryant, leader of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And Oliver Nussen makes his way to the front of the platform here at the Royal Albert Hall to open tonight's prom with Honegger's Pacific 231. Oliver Nussen conducts the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
Well, you can imagine Le Tremble thundering through the night from Paris to Nice, or the Perpignan Express drawn by one of those Pacific Class 231 locomotives. Pacific 231 by Arthur Honegger, the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Oliver Nussen, opening this Friday night BBC prom. Well, a vast orchestra for that first piece. No surprise a few players to leave the stage, ready for rather more intimate Honegger in just a couple of minutes' time in Pastoral d'Été, Summer Pastoral. So while we allow the stage to clear and the orchestra to regroup, a chance to hear from Oliver Nussen. We talked earlier on this afternoon about Pacific 231, first of all, and whether or not its composer was a lover of railway engines.
There are a lot of contradictory statements by Honegger about the relationship of this piece to trains. On the one hand, he said it's a tribute to this enormous piece of machinery hurtling through the night at God knows how many kilometres an hour, which is to me what it really is. And on the other hand, he said it had nothing to do with trains, that the title was an afterthought, and that it was actually a study in acceleration while the actual tempo of the music decelerates at the same time. And it is that as well. But for me, it's a mixture, this wonderful mixture of like a kid's enthusiasm type tone poem and a piece of 1920s machine music that reminds me of these sort of posters of Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times and that sort of thing. It's very much of that world.
We're going to enter a very different world next with Honegger. Writing 3 years earlier, Pastoral d'Été, it's very different.
Almost all the pieces that I know from the early 20s, in fact, for most of those, are pretty full-on and driven pieces. And this seems to have been a rare moment of relaxation. And what I had not realised, and felicitously for this programme, actually, is that it's an alpine summer. And if you listen to it with the Alps in view, you hear little tiny bits of yodeling going on in the clarinet and things like that. What interests me about it is that he seems to have discovered for himself a specifically 20th century kind of pastoralism that I think it was very influential. I mean, for example, this piece reminds me very much in atmosphere of something like Appalachian Spring of Copland, or the gentler parts of things like Billy the Kid, and even in some respects Britain, the pastoral bits, interludes in things like The Turn of the Screw, Variations in the Turn of the Screw. And I think it's sort of a piece that's sort of been hidden in the background in some ways of our consciousness. It was very, very popular, and it also reminds me, by the way, of the music for Dr. Finlay's Casebook, but I mean, you know.
Not sure I wanted to know that immediately before we hear the piece. It's prefaced by a quote by the poet Rambo, "I embrace the summer dawn." Pastoral d'Été uses a small orchestra, single woodwind, and just one horn gently unfolds from its subtle, gentle start. Oliver Nussen returns to the rostrum to conduct the BBC Symphony Orchestra in Honegger's Pastoral d'Été.
The music of a warm summer morning, one alpine August in the country, and all seems well. Pastoral d'Ete by Arthur Honegger. What a different sound world from Pacific 231, the piece we open with tonight. Honegger influenced by Wagner, by Debussy as well. Big fan of both composers. Composers who didn't absolutely find favour with his fellow members, the French group of composers Les Six. Honegger, though, Swiss rather than French. Well, next tonight we're going to launch the focus that runs throughout this prom season on Frank Bridge with his impression for small orchestra, There Is a Willow Grows a Slant of Brook. It's taken from Gertrude's speech in Hamlet, where she describes the death of Ophelia. And this is a work that's got its premiere here at the proms in 1927. Oliver Nussen.
I find this piece extraordinarily impressive. I'm amazed that it's not, well, it's done a lot more than it used to be done, which was never. But it has a brooding, dark quality that's also, by the way, a sort of brooding, dark, pastoral kind of quality that I find really quite unique. I want to say it's very Bergian. It reminds me very much of some of the night music, let's say, in Wozzeck and things like that. But it also looks forward to Bridge's pupil, Benjamin Britten. It also has in common a lot with the English pastoral composers who were active then, but not in terms of the actual notes. It's just the atmosphere. I suppose if there's a famous British composer that it's anything like at all, it would be Holst. And I remember looking at the score for the first time and thinking, goodness, this will be a difficult piece because you have to capture an atmosphere and it has to be together and all this blah, 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 blah. But in fact, it is so well written for the instruments and it is so well designed and so well crafted that it almost plays itself with players of this calibre.
Well, the work opens evoking the glassy stream that Gertrude describes to Hamlet and the reflections of the willow's leaves on the water. There's also a sense of doom in the air. Harp and oboe suggest the fantastic garlands that Ophelia hangs on the pendant bough. Then follows what Andrew Byrne describes in tonight's programme as a bitonal chord riven with pity. For in the vivid musical evocation of Ophelia's fall, the clarinet's precipitous descent literally plunges us into the weeping brook. A lament from solo violin, viola and cello with muted accompaniment provides Ophelia's requiem. Oliver Nussen conducts the BBC Symphony Orchestra in There Is a Willow Grows a Slant a Brook by Frank Bridge.